So I told my boys a long time ago that you know you're getting older when you fall and you don't really care who saw. You know, I can remember when I was young, if you tripped and fell or something, man, you looked around and you jumped up as quick as you could. You know, yeah, a sign of age is when you fall and you really don't care. You just start assessing all of your body. So Thursday, I took a dive with my grandson. If you want the full story, talk to Brooks. It's probably a better story from Brooks than me, because it's really embarrassing on my account. But in any event, I have hurt my lower back, so I am moving incredibly slow. So I'm going to walk around a little bit because it seems to help to walk. But this morning we're going to be in Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 38. We're getting back to the Sermon on the Mount. We took a break last week for Easter. I hope you enjoyed the lesson last week, connecting the garden, the two gardens, the garden with the tomb and then the Garden of Eden. And God calling us to this place of leaving the grave into the garden rather than going into the grave. And so I hope and pray that that was meaningful to y'all. But this morning we're going to talk about a topic that is kind of sandwiched in here, and it's kind of an interesting one. As Jesus continues to teach, and again, I think it's important that you keep, there's several things that I've asked you guys to keep in your mind as we've gone through the Sermon on the Mount. There's several things that I've really wanted you to always keep in the backdrop of your thinking, because I think it's important in terms of context. The first being that really the Sermon on the Mount, I think imagery would lend us to believe that Jesus is speaking and there's thousands and thousands upon thousands of people sitting and listening to him. When reality, he was teaching more intimately than that. He sat down, as is said, and he's with his 12. I think there's a lot of people listening in, but this message and this teaching was really more of an intimate teaching to his 12. I think it's important for us to see that, because he's calling them, as he is calling us, he's calling them to a different kind of life, to live life in almost countercultural, all right? And that message is still super relevant in today's society, of learning how to live countercultural, because the culture has an expectation. When something happens, there's an expectation based and determined by culture. And then Jesus steps in and kind of gives them something that is so outlandish that for so many years of my life, I took the Sermon on the Mount and just kind of almost excused it away. Because it's like, how in the world can anybody live like that? You know, I struggle with just these few things, and Jesus is calling us and elevating our lifestyle to something that is so far beyond my comprehension that oftentimes I've just excused it and said, thank you for Jesus' blood. But I don't think he's calling us to excuse these teachings. I think he's calling each of us to a different kind of life. The other thing I told you to keep in the back of your mind as we go through the Sermon on the Mount is, did he really say that? Did he really call me to be that, to live that way, to act this way? And the answer to that question is a resounding yes. And so as we go into one that I like, because I like the word retaliation, much like most humans like the word retaliation. We have this mindset, and culture would tell us that if something negative happens to us, oftentimes we just want to raise the stakes. Anybody else like that besides me? You do something to me, I'm going to do something back, but it's going to be worse. How many of y'all have said this, even in friendships? I get even, right? Or I'm going to elevate this. Or, you know, sometimes there's pranks in our office where someone does something to someone else. And the whole idea is I'm gonna call that and I'm going to raise you, because we're going to raise the stakes on this thing. And I think that's a natural human tendency. Anybody else agree with me? Can you think back? You know, oftentimes I think guys kind of get the bad end of this deal because we're physical, and oftentimes what we do is very noticeable and evident. But women, I'll be honest with you, y'all are conniving sometimes, right? And oftentimes it's with our words, isn't it? And so I think each of us can find a place in here where we understand the idea of retaliation. And so as Jesus introduces this as the next theme of what he wants to talk about, You know, we talked about oaths 2 weeks ago, retaliation this week and next week. He's going to just keep raising the stakes, all right? Because this week it's retaliation. Next week we're going to be called to do something no one likes to do, which is called loving your enemies. But in the midst of this one, it's going to springboard into the next one. So let's read this text this morning and then we'll break it down. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. Man, I don't know about y'all, but that just doesn't set well. Let me say this as we introduce this idea of retaliation, as we break it down. He's quoting kind of this Old Testament idea that it's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Anybody like that one? Okay, yeah, we like that one, right? But in that, in the midst of that, it's not saying raise the stakes, is it? He's saying, hey, make it equal. It's an eye for an eye, it's a tooth for a tooth. There's an equality there. There is a punishment that equals the crime, if you will. But he goes a step further and says, listen, that's not what we are called to do. We are called to do something different. We are called not to resist. Let me read that verse. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. And that just... that has created a great stigma in the Christian community. This teaching has created a great misunderstanding, for lack of a better way of saying it, in the Christian community. This text oftentimes means, and oftentimes we ourselves view it this way, and other people view us this way, that Christians are a doormat. Anybody ever felt that way? Like we're just a doormat. You know, we get taken advantage of, we get spoken poorly about, we get all of these things done to us, and God just expects us to just take it. That is not what this text says. We are not a doormat. I used to tell my boys something. Hunter hated it. You know, I think he's even shared a story once about being in Pagosa Springs. He walks up to me, we were at a basketball tournament, he walks up to me and he goes, hey Dad, there's this kid being mean. Can I punch him in the face? So you can laugh. It's kind of funny because it was funny to me a little bit, right? And I was like, no, you can't do that. I was a good parent, right? It's like, you know, because my dad would have said, sure. Because I was raised where you don't, I got in trouble if you started a fight, right? But I also got in trouble if I didn't. See, some of y'all are old enough to get it, right? That was kind of the training I received, you know? And when Hunter found out that that's how Dad was trained, he wanted me to train him that way. And I'm like, no, we're not. And I used to use a phrase, kill him with kindness. That was always the phrase I used with him. And it frustrated him to no end. I don't want to be kind to this person who is being evil, right? And so... how he translated kill him with kindness is avoid him. That's not kindness, though, is it? And oftentimes, I think in our Christian walk, we get treated poorly and we're like, man, God doesn't want me to, you know, matter of fact, let's say this. And Paul says in Romans, I think, chapter 12, verse 17, do not repay evil with evil. And so we take that message and we culminate it with this Sermon on the Mount message of Jesus saying, don't be this retaliatory person. And we're starting to see a picture, because what Jesus is calling his 12 intimately into, what he's asking them to do is don't succumb to evil. Don't repay evil with evil. I think Paul delicately says it in Romans and in Thessalonians as well. He's saying, hey, because this is what we do in our human tendency, is oftentimes we stoop, don't we? We get handled poorly, and oftentimes we stoop and handle them with the exact same way that they handled us. And Jesus is saying, stop that. How are you ever going to win anybody over if you repay evil with evil? So let's talk about the three examples that he gives us as he's saying, don't be retaliatory. And as I'm saying, that doesn't mean we're a doormat. Because it frustrates me that so many times in our Christian walk, we feel like God's calling us just to take it. Why? Because we read a text like this. Sorry, moving slowly. No judgment, right? If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other one also. Man, that just sounds like a doormat, doesn't it? Let's break it down, because this was one of the more fascinating ones to me as I studied it and listened to a few guys talk about this. Jason, can I borrow you real quick? Yeah, come up here. Yeah. So we're gonna do this. Let's move so they can see too. Don't hit me. Don't hit me. All right. Please, dear God, don't hit me. In this text, let's break it down. It says, if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, you left or right-handed? Most people are. I'm left-handed, right? But most people are right-handed. So the instruction is, if somebody slaps you on the right cheek, what does that mean for you as a dominant right-handed person? You got to slap me here, right? With that arm, how are you going to do it? Backhand. Y'all with me on that? Backhand. You can have a seat. Thanks for that. I appreciate you not hitting me. So, for us to understand this, because it's specific here, isn't it? If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, offer him the other one. So let's talk about that. Because in our Western understanding, this makes really no sense. We take it exactly how we read it in our Western mindset, in our modern mindset, okay? Modern mindset would say if somebody slaps you, it's not a closed fist. If I want to hurt you, I'm not going to slap you. Would everybody agree with that? If I'm going to hurt you, what am I going to do? I'm going to close my fist, right? That I'm intending harm if I'm going to close my fist. But if I'm going to slap you, it's almost shaming you. Y'all with me on that? If I'm going to open hand slap you, it's shaming you. But there's a significant difference back in these people's day between a backhand and a front hand. Did you know that? I didn't either. A backhand slapping would indicate that I am superior to you. I am putting you down. I'm making you lower than me. Y'all with me on that? If I choose to backhand you, I am not only shaming you, but I am also putting you in a place that is inferior to me. That's what it meant. Everything back then had a meaning, right? And so if Jason backhands me, in their culture, what that meant is you are not only putting me in this shameful position, but you are also elevating yourself over me. And so what does Jesus say? Be a doormat? No. Offer him the other cheek. Why? Because that puts you back into a place of equality with them. If they choose to slap you on the other cheek, it will be with an open hand, which unwinds what they've intended for you. I want you to see this picture because this picture is painted differently if you take into consideration where they're coming from. And so he's saying, hey, I'm not asking you to be a doormat, and I'm not asking you not to have some embarrassment with this, right? I'll be honest with you, Jason, if you backhanded me, it would be embarrassing, right? It would be even more embarrassing for them because the embarrassment of shame, number one, but there's equal, if not more, embarrassment of being considered less than you. But now I'm going to take that pain and I'm going to offer my other cheek because in the process of me offering my other cheek to you, I'm trying to challenge you to say, no, you're not. No, you're not. Jesus isn't saying be a doormat. I've heard it said like in women relationships. It's like in Christian homes, you see it a lot in marriage where a woman is being verbally abused or physically abused. And the Christian mindset is go back. Go back into that home. Continue that. And we get this mindset that we're just supposed to be a doormat. God didn't call us to retaliate. God called us to just keep taking it on the chin. And that is not what Jesus is challenging his disciples to do. He's saying elevate. Put them in a place where they have to stop and genuinely contemplate their decisions. It's kindness in kind of a way. So let's look at the second one. If anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. This one's kind of funny. So, again, to understand this, back in the day, if somebody sued you, they could sue you for your cloak. But interestingly enough, if they took your cloak from you because of a law, because they owed you something, and they took it from you, did you know that they would have to return it to you at night? They could take your cloak, but they would have to return it to you for the night so that you wouldn't be without. But then they could take it back from you. So the law would dictate if somebody sued you, it would not be for what Jesus is talking about here. All right? What does Jesus say? If somebody sues you and takes what? Your shirt. It's a good Western translation, right? Your tunic. That means they're probably not suing you how the law stated they should sue you. Because they shouldn't sue you for your shirt, they should sue you for your cloak. And so in this, Jesus is saying if somebody goes as far as suing you for not what the law intended them to sue you for, then offer them your cloak as well. Well, let me ask you a question. Jason, I'd use you again, but I'm not going to on this one. All right, if you sue me for my shirt, right, and I gave it to you, and you're standing there, but I can cover up because I have my cloak still, right? But if I give you my cloak too, and you're standing there this morning, right, and you're holding not only my shirt but my cloak, and I'm standing here naked, where's the shame? What does it draw attention to? You. Draws attention to the one who didn't do it how they were supposed to do it. Is it embarrassing for me?
Yeah.
Right? But what's that? We'll save it for later, Linda. I can already tell you don't want to repeat it. So. But here's my point. Jesus is saying, listen, man, go into these situations. And again, the backdrop being Paul's language is saying, don't repay evil with evil. Don't repay evil with evil. Be creative. Oh. How can I retaliate in a Christian way? How can I retaliate in a way that isn't me stooping to what you've done, but in a way expressing a different meaning? Hey, you've wronged me because you've sued me inappropriately. You've wronged me because you've not sued me for how the law would dictate that you sue me, but you've sued me inappropriately, and now you're taking from me what you shouldn't be taking from me. And so in the midst of that, I'm going to give it all to you. Because now everyone will know that you were inappropriate in your actions. It's embarrassing for me, but it also calls attention to the one who's doing it inappropriately. The third one, if somebody asks you to carry, this is kind of going to lean itself to the Roman occupation. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. During this period of time, the Romans could force or tell someone, hey, carry my stuff for the next mile. It's interesting that the Romans understood that they liked to take advantage of people. And so they allowed them to do it, but they put stipulations on it. All right, we're not going to just allow you to do it continuously, but you could do this for a mile. But then at the end of that mile, you're on your own again. And Jesus is saying, and they pose this in the, if you've watched The Chosen, you see this play out. You see that Jesus and his disciples are walking and some Roman soldiers approach him and say, hey, for the next mile, here's all our stuff. Here's all our gear. Here's our helmet, our shields, our body armor, our bags, our luggage. And you're going to care. And you could see the disciples being super frustrated. And Jesus saying, no, this is just what we're going to do, right? And you can see the humiliation in this act. I challenge you guys to watch this because I think it just brings to life some of what I'm talking about this morning. And you see the humiliation in this mile that they're walking. Because the soldiers are teasing them a little bit, whacking the helmets further down on their head, and it's abusive. And they get to the end of that mile, and Jesus keeps walking, and his disciples are starting to offload stuff. And he looks back, and he's like, hey, pick it all back up. Let's go another mile. You can see in that moment the change in the Roman soldiers. You can see in that moment that the requirement of the law has been fulfilled. But these people are doing something past that. And now all of a sudden, it creates in the Roman soldiers this uncertainty. Almost a little bit of humility. Of, hey, no, you guys don't need to do that. Oh, no, we will. Because that last mile was on you. This last mile is going to be me loving you in spite of how you've treated me. That's killing them with kindness. That's not avoidance. That's not giving them high fives and saying, you guys have a good rest of your journey. It's saying, no, I'm going to choose this. Because in the midst of me choosing this, you are no longer seeing me out of an obligation, but you are now currently seeing me out of someone who's going to do something for somebody who doesn't deserve it. Sound familiar? This guy named Jesus who's telling this story. He's fixing to do something for mankind that he didn't have to do, that he chose to do. And you see, if you watch The Chosen, you see this unfold. And you see over the next mile, these Roman soldiers starting to feel some guilt about the previous mile. And all of a sudden, there's some conversation happening. Right? Because now these people are saying, who would you call? I already know the answer to this question. If you shoot an elk up in the middle of the booger woods, who do you call to help you get it out? And somebody who's probably likes you, right? Especially if you're not planning on paying them, right? Or maybe let's make it a little more personal. Who do you call to help you move? Because me, I'm like, man, I have something already committed for that weekend. Right? You call people who have something, right? Who love you. And because anybody like moving? Lana and I have had an interesting journey over the last year of our lives. You know, we sold our house last May. And it's been this full circle, I don't know. So they wanted not just our house, but they wanted everything in it. And so we relented and sold, you know, a house that we had lived in for 10 years. Moving was easy. Right? It's like, pack your clothes, that's about it. Replacing has been brutal. Right? The person who pushed us the most to sell everything in our house was Hunter. Why? Yeah, you guys can figure it out, right? Because he knew he wasn't going to make a decision to move mom and dad out of love, but out of obligation, right? I want you to hear Jesus' teaching, because what Jesus is saying is, I'm not asking you to be a doorman. I'm asking you to create an opportunity for you to be able to speak into people. Because if you repay evil with evil, what are you doing? You're cutting that off, aren't you? You no longer have the ability to speak truth if you just stooped into this place where you're saying, okay, I'll see your evil and raise you one evil. Jesus is saying, stop, because once you do that, you have hindered the work of the kingdom, which is what he preached about the most in his 3 years. He preached about advancing the kingdom. And if you want to advance the kingdom, that may mean you've got to turn the other cheek, right? But create an opportunity to speak into that person's life. It may mean that you not only give them your tunic, but you give them your cloak too. Why? Because you've given yourself and granted yourself an opportunity for truth to be spread. It might mean that you shouldn't just go the required mile, but that you should go another mile. Why? Because in that next mile, you're going to have an opportunity to speak truth. Jesus took full advantage of every opportunity to advance his kingdom. He's asking his 12 to take this opportunity and turn it, flip it. He's not saying be a doormat. He's saying be creative. Be creative so that they can see me in you in the midst of them doing evil. Paul says don't repay evil with evil, because once you do, you have lost the leverage to speak Jesus into their lives. How many relationships, if you look back over your life, how many relationships have you severed that you no longer have the ability to speak that anymore because of who you were in that? Whether it was to start it or to finish it, but you severed a relationship due to your actions. I think each of us have some of those relationships. My challenge is that you go into those relationships and apologize. And create an opportunity for God's kingdom to be advanced. Years ago, I'll end with this. You've heard Hunter talk about Jeremy Homer, a gentleman that's worked for me for probably 17 years. When I first hired Jeremy, his family worshiped at Northside Church of Christ. He was in high school. Jeremy was, and I don't think Jeremy would mind me sharing this. Matter of fact, I know he wouldn't. Jeremy was mean, hateful, oftentimes retaliatory, most of the time. And Mike and I just kept loving on him, and he did some things even in my view that were just out of line. And I can remember on one specific occasion, our manager at the time of the store, Jeremy came to him and said, hey, I've got a soccer game at 5 o'clock tonight. Can I leave a half hour early? And my manager told him no. Well, Jeremy went on to think, well, when Kevin and Mike are gone, you leave early all the time and don't ask. So he just left early. So when I get back into the office the next morning, I've got two people really mad. I've got a manager mad that Jeremy didn't listen to him. And I've got Jeremy mad because he feels justified in his actions because he's basing his actions on the manager's actions. Sound familiar? And Jeremy's known me for years at this point in time. And so when he comes up into my office confidently to tell me his side of the story, he just knows Kevin's going to agree with me. Because Kevin knows, if Kevin knows that Joey's leaving early all the time, Kevin's going to be mad at Joey and understand why I made the decision I made. So Jeremy gives me his position on this. And I look Jeremy straight in the eyes and I said, you're wrong. You're wrong. And he was dumbfounded that I told him he was wrong. So you're basing your actions on all the wrong reasons. You're basing your actions on somebody else's abuse instead of who God calls you to be. You should have been here because your superior asked you to be here. Was it right? Probably not. For him to ask you that and live a different way? But it doesn't change the fact that the guy we put in charge of you asked you to do something and you refused to do it. And you defended it by his evil actions. I would tell you that Jeremy, 10 years later, is one of the most godly people I know. And it's not because of that event. It's because people didn't give up on him. And people maintained a certain position of leverage. And people taught him, even when it hurt, even when it didn't seem right. But so many times in our lives, we'll take a position, and we'll take a position and justify it by somebody else's actions. And I think ultimately that's what Jesus is calling us to. He's saying, quit reacting based on humans. Start reacting based on me. And that looks different. It's countercultural. We're not reacting based on what someone did to me. We're reacting to a situation based on what God has called me to be. And that's not a doormat. Be creative. But create in that an opportunity to continue to advance the kingdom. I think that's what Jesus is teaching his 12. So if any of these events, these three specific events that Jesus chooses to utilize that meant something to them, in our culture, we struggle with it, right? Because we don't understand all the nuances of, you know, turning your cheek and understanding a backhand versus a front hand back then. Or understand that it was legally, you could legally sue for a cloak but not a tunic. We don't get that. But if I bring those things to light, I hope that you see in that what God is calling us to be is not to stoop to a level that hinders his kingdom from advancing. Quit repaying evil with evil. But that does not mean be a doormat. This morning I want to challenge you. If there's anything that this church can do for you, ultimately it was Jesus' choice not to retaliate against the wrong that was done to him that ultimately landed him on the cross. But because of that choice, he has called us to live differently. But he's called us to live boldly in his promises. Boldly. He's not called you to be a second-rate citizen. He's called you into his kingdom to be a citizen. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, I'd challenge you to come as Mark leads us in an invitation song.